This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:37 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. And our next story is about our good old friend corruption. although we're actually focused on something new, which is whether or not certain behaviors actually contribute to people eventually behaving in corrupt ways.
Yeah, so this is interesting. Recently, de facto law minister Dato' Taqiyuddin Hassan said that particular attitudes are encouraging corruption among public servants, specifically greed, a desire to live beyond their means, and a lack of integrity. So this was based on a study by MACC, and he had shared these findings in Parliament.
So as a follow-up to this, and we'll come back to that, but as a follow-up to this, the government has asked all of their agencies to come up with their own plans to identify and address internal causes of corruption. It's known as the Organizational Anti-Corruption Plan, and it will also apply to state companies and private businesses that are regulated.
Right, and separately, the MACC will also be monitoring large-scale procurements to reduce leakages in government funds and improve integrity. So, and all of this essentially falls under the National Anti-Corruption Plan 2019 to 2023, which was launched initially by Pakatan Harapan.
So I hesitated earlier about how to frame this story or how to think about it, because it's an oddly personal finding. So corruption is sort of this big thing that stretches across so many different departments that is obviously, you know, a huge issue that needs addressing. But it's funny, therefore, that the findings are not so much addressing this on a systemic level, but instead arguing that personal traits, because something like greed or a lack of integrity, that's very personal. Yeah. You know, that's not really a systemic thing.
And arbitrary, right? It's like, how do we also like measure these things? Because they're quite, like you said, they're very big ideas, big principles, and I wonder, these behaviors go back to our education system. I'm wondering sort of like what went wrong along the way if these are the causes of corruption.
Right. My argument, I think, is that, and the reason why I brought up this idea of it being systemic is because you could be a person with lots of integrity, or you think you have lots of integrity, and you are put in a situation or a circumstance where everybody else, or there's a lot of corruption, there's rampant corruption. And so then you are left with a few choices, right? You can try to reform the situation, you can leave, or you play by the rules of, you know, the whole when in Rome thing. And so I think this idea of isolating it to personal behaviors, I'm not sure how helpful that is compared to looking at the system and addressing it on that level. But I mean, we'll have to wait and see in some ways, because they're actually going to be diving into each individual department. And I guess we'll go from there.
To that, it also sort of places the burden on individuals, right? It's sort of by saying that their behaviors are causing corruption, right? It's why they engage in it. To me, it sounds like they expect individuals to rectify it themselves. And I don't know at this point what sort of changes are needed to actually encourage people to say no, or to talk about it in a way that they're you know, transparent and in a comfortable way with others.
So do you think that addressing corruption on a personal level, that looking at individual behaviors, is the way to go? Or do we stick to a more systemic, you know, government-wide approach, department-wide approach? What do you think? Call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be speaking after this with Cynthia Gabriel, human rights advocate at C4, or the Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism. So we're going to be finding out her take. Again, we'd love to hear yours. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry-free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:43. This is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril, and we're talking about whether or not certain sorts of behaviors and attitudes are actually encouraging corruption among public servants, and weighing it out, right? Whether it should be addressed on a personal level like that or looked at on a systemic level. So let us know your thoughts. But in the meantime, we're also crossing over to Cynthia Gabriel, human rights advocate at C4, the Center to Combat Corruption and Cronyism. Cynthia, thanks for joining us. So what's your take on the findings from MECC? Do you agree that corruption among public servants is driven by behavioral traits like greed?
Yeah, I mean, it's not particularly surprising for us. We've been tracking the unexplained wealth of politicians, and especially those that are holding power for some time. And we find that it's a real growing threat to Malaysian society, because people who hold power now actually have that vested power through elections and how people have vested their power in them. But there are increasingly growing numbers of politicians who are now living beyond their means, beyond what the salary bestowed upon them can actually allow them to live. So some of them actually have mansions in top cities in the world, like New York, London, Paris. We have learned from scandals, you know, 1MDB, Mara scandal, even Felda, money that was actually meant for poor rural Malay farmers, actually being siphoned off for investment into million-dollar homes. So it's become really amazing that even at the civil service level, you will remember the story of the Sabah Water Works Department director who was caught with millions of ringgit tucked away in the walls of his house and office. And he had a Swiss bank account, property overseas, etc. And it just dawned upon us that there's something really wrong, not just with these individuals, but probably a more systemic problem that was facing Malaysian society and politicians who were holding power. So I think it is interesting that the MECC has said this and the law minister has confirmed that it's human greed and abuse of power that had actually resulted in all this, which is pretty much the case as we can see how the court trials are unfolding with Zahid Hamidi, Tengku Adnan, Najib, and all these former UMNO stalwarts.
So having brought up all these examples, what would you say is the root of the problem here?
So the problem, I see it as a two-part. I mean, one is definitely behavioral, that every human being desires to live in some kind of luxury. And when you have unchecked power, then it becomes really dangerous, because that unchecked power will give you the license to use money that doesn't belong to you just to keep up to a certain standard, to drive that luxury car, to buy watches that cost thousands of dollars, and so on and so forth. So it's about the upkeep of a certain lifestyle that you get addicted to, right? Just being consumeristic, materialistic, at a very grand scale. So it doesn't stop, because the more you have, the more you want, and the more you strive to achieve and get and show off stuff. So it's very much behavioral. But we're more concerned about how it has become structural, how it has become so systemic. So even if you're basically a decent, good chap wanting to go in there just to do an honest job, sometimes it becomes very difficult because the system just allows you to live that kind of life. And I think this kind of unexplained wealth has become a huge threat to Malaysia's culture and financial system as well.
So you say it's more systemic. How helpful is it that the government is choosing to focus on individuals instead of tackling the more structural issues that you've pointed out?
Yeah, so which is why we are not in agreement that it's the individuals that need to change. It is the system that needs to change. And it is the system of a political patronage. It is a system which is based on loyalty and rewards that needs to change. it is a system in which politicians expect their masters to hand them money, and how political donations are regulated in this country or not regulated. We also don't have a law on political donations. It is the whole system of dependency of constituents and people on their political leaders that needs to change. So all these are structural problems that need to change before the individuals can actually feel that the change is worth the while coming from them. And it's really important to build a culture of integrity, which we can teach in schools, which we can teach in private colleges, and ready the young generation before they enter the workforce and all that. Because if we do all this, the education part, without any real structural reform and any real strengthening of the system that will actually ward off political corruption, then we are not going to actually achieve its targets, because the system makes it very vulnerable for Malaysians to actually deal with more corrupt practices. So if you look at best practice countries like, say, for example, New Zealand, or even countries that have evolved over the years like Indonesia and Taiwan, from dictatorships to transition democracies and more robust democracies now, you find that they have very strong accountability mechanisms. And one of the key, most important reforms actually deal with the institutions, and that the institutions need to be independent without executive influence, without executive control. So for example, the demand and the fight to make any MACC really impartial is something that is so critical, so important, which means the chief commissioner should not have its appointment made through any kind of influence by the prime minister. And it should be an appointment done via parliament, for example. So these have been things that we have been talking about for many years, but it hasn't been able to make any change, because you need constitutional amendment and so on and so forth.
And while we're talking about parliament, what role can it play in all of this?
Yeah, similarly, parliament is another very, very critical check and balance institution. But you find that the appointment of speaker, for example, is also done via the prime minister. And all of this actually needs to change. So when you do all this, you have institutions which are very independent. People will have greater confidence to be able to go and lodge complaints to the police, to the MACC, to lodge judicial complaints, so that they feel that, okay, it's actually worthwhile blowing the whistle on something, going out there, lodging a report, because they know their reports are going to be taken seriously, their reports will be investigated impartially, and this is where we need to go. We need to build institutions which are independent, not those that are subservient to the government of the day or to the executive. So that is the first step. And so when people feel that kind of confidence, then they may feel, yes, it's very important, because these institutions are really fiercely doing their work. It's really important that I behave in a way that has enough integrity. If not, I will be tracked down, I will be watched, you know, and I must make sure that I'm a good example for my children, etc., etc. Then it's a cultural shift that you will find, that everyone will start to realize there is standards to follow. There are laws to follow. And if you don't follow it, it will be enforced without fear, without favor. So right now, especially right now, we can see Dua Darjat case, a case of double standards being practiced very obviously when it comes to quarantine for people in power, quarantine and fines for the average person. So these kind of things don't augur well at all for public confidence. So for the average person, they'll be, why should I even make a change or a difference? Because everyone's doing it. My political leaders are also doing it. So really, the change needs to come from the top, and the change needs to be structural.
So what other steps then can the government take?
If this government is actually serious about anti-corruption measures, one of the first and most important things they need to do is to put back the National Anti-Corruption Plan on the table and review some of the very serious decisions that they have taken on in terms of political appointments, for example, into government-linked companies, as in how the Perikatan Nasional has actually put in members of parliament into many, many government-linked companies as chairman, directors, and so on and so forth. So it's really critical because MPs are there to serve the rakyat. MPs already have very high pay, and they pay very handsomely. So to be able to imagine that they're also going to be paid via GLC salaries and all that is really quite unbecoming of a government that speaks about anti-corruption but is actually doing quite the opposite. And we are pretty concerned that appointments of politicians into government-linked company boards actually creates a very vulnerable situation in which corrupt practices can occur. So this is really the fear and the scenario that it could erode even further, that government-linked companies, for example, deal with massive public funds and they deal with massive issues when it comes to services delivery, privatization of services, and so on and so forth. So it is really, really something that Prime Minister Muhyiddin needs to undo and needs to repair in terms of image, that if they're really serious for anti-corruption policies, put back the National Anti-Corruption Plan on the table, remove politicians from government-linked company boards, promote transparency in governance and how public policy is made as opposed to making it more opaque. Really, we're not sure where the country is going because of all this political infighting and all that. And very importantly, we now have a new law which also sheds the spotlight on corporate liability. So the corporate sector, public-private partnerships and all that needs to be scrutinized much further. What's the role of the corporate sector in actually curbing corruption and to actually live out that SDG 16.5, you know, of trying to stop bribery practices, etc., with public officials to get contracts and so on and so forth. So there's a lot that this government needs to do to show that it's actually serious about warding off corruption. Right now, we don't even know whether the NACP is on track, whether the Organizational Anti-Corruption Plan, which was supposed to have been already put into motion in 2019, is actually being done. Where's the audit for that, the tracking progress? It seems like we aren't really moving forward in terms of cutting corruption. So this unexplained wealth is like the tip of an iceberg that just runs really deep into various other systemic problems.
Cynthia, thank you so much again for speaking to us. That was Cynthia Gabriel, human rights advocate at C4, or the Center to Combat Corruption and Cronyism. And we're focusing today specifically on a report or a study from MACC, which said that certain attitudes are encouraging corruption among public servants. And I was heartened to hear that, you know, at least from Cynthia's point of view, that shouldn't or cannot be just viewed through that lens, because I really cannot understand the approach.
Yeah, but it seems like from some messages we've got, for instance, Kunbun, who says, corruption is a pandemic in this country and there is no vaccine except human conscience. A moral compass will determine the future of this country. So it looks like some people are viewing this lens through you know, these very abstract ideals, which is, you know, you have greed on one hand, lack of integrity, and then this thing called human conscience, right? And but for me personally, I was glad that there were some systemic things that Cynthia addressed that can be implemented.
Meanwhile, Neil says, it's not rocket science. Go for those at the top. Follow the Hong Kong model. Make the MACC totally independent, thus instilling fear in those thinking of receiving corrupt money, and also pay civil servants properly. Yet, will this actually happen? I doubt it somehow.
Yeah, independence has been something I think that's popped up and sort of gotten lost in the conversation. So I think important thing to address. We've also got Cheryl Akmar, who says corruption is rampant in Malaysia because there's no enforcement and selective prosecution. And until today, there's never been an MP who's been found guilty for corruption. Although I'd say that there have been politicians that have been prosecuted. For example, Dr. Kir Toyo, right, the former Selangor Menteri Besar. But there have been processes, right? The court this year found former Prime Minister Dato' Sri Najib, guilty. So I think I'd have to disagree with Cheryl there and say that our courts are working.
So tell us what you make of this issue, especially based on the MACC report. I just can't find a way except to view it systemically, personally at least. That's where I stand. But let us know. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.